And our guest, Lionel Fanthorpe, we're talking demons, Satanism, demonology, right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your phone calls with him this hour as well, so we'll be back in just a moment. Did the cave dwellers, Lionel, did they witness demons?
Well, I think that the earliest history of Satanism probably does go back all the way to the cave dwellers, and there's strange pictures of half-human, half-animal entities found on the cave paintings in the Dordogne region in France. And, of course, they've been interpreted in different ways by archaeologists, and some of them regard these paintings as evidence of early shamanism. Others would consider that these half-human, half-beast forms indicate a belief in some sort of evil supernatural entity, you know, like the Minotaur of Knossos that came along much later. And these archaeologists have really got the idea that some of these very strange creatures, if we think about their ancient burial rites, which is what provides us with vital clues to the religious thinking of the people who carried out those burials. And if we go all the way back to, you know, Homo Neanderthalis and Homo sapiens, at the very earliest times, these quasi-religious behaviors at burial times could indicate elements of belief in animism, belief in magic. If we go back 60,000 years, the Neanderthals seem to have had ideas about life after death. They buried grave goods with their dead for them to use in the next world. There's the famous cave of Shanadar in Iraq. And one of our great American archaeologists, Ralph Selecki from Columbia University, he investigated the Shanadar cave. It's in the Zagros Mountains in Kurdistan. And he found 9 Neanderthal skeletons with all sorts of evidence about their ritual burial customs, which do rather suggest that these earliest of human attempts at religion and at an expression of belief in good and evil and a life in this world followed by a life in another world do really go back to the times of, you know, prehistoric ancestors. There's a very remarkable picture in another of the French caves, and this thing is called the Sorcerer. It's got human feet, muscular hind legs that could be either human or animal. There's a very prominent bushy tail, like the tail of a greatly enlarged squirrel. And what is this thing? Is he meant to be a demon? And so it goes on. Over in the Western Kalahari in Botswana, there are hundreds of strange prehistoric carvings and paintings. All we can really get from the only knowledge we can get of what our remote ancestors thought about possible satanic entities, possible demonic entities. Did the jinn come and visit them? You know, we can't say with any certainty, but the paintings they have left us and the details that scientists can gain from their burial customs would certainly seem to suggest a belief in good and evil and a belief, if not maybe, encounters with very strange entities, demons or jinn, as we were talking about earlier.
There seems to be a camp out there that confuses Satan and Lucifer. Are we dealing with two different entities here?
Well, the history of the Lucifer story is that he was the very bright, powerful angel who was jealous of the supreme divine powers of God, and that Lucifer fell from heaven or was thrown from heaven. Now, Satan crops up in a rather different context. even though the two names have now become synonymous, it's a very, very interesting distinction that you've raised here, George, because the idea of Satan, as he occurs in the book of Job in the Old Testament, it's not the name of an individual. He's referred to in the Hebrew as the Satan. He's got the definite article in front of him. And it's in the same way that if we were watching a film or a video about a trial, about a legal process going on, an enactment in court, then we talk about the prosecutor and the defender, or the prosecuting counsel and the defense counsel. Now, the idea of the Satan originally was that he was not disobedient to God in any way, that he was doing his job, and it was a rather difficult job for him. His function was to test people, to tempt them, to see whether their faith would stand up. And so in the book of Job, we get this character who has a rank rather than a name, referred to as the Satan, and he is arguing with God in his role as prosecuting counsel against human beings and their moral behavior, and saying, is Job as good a man as you think he is, God, or is he only being good because he is being rewarded? He's got he's enormously wealthy. He's happily married. He's got sons and daughters. He's got a big, happy, loving family. He's got all the money he needs, all the wealth he needs, and everything's perfect for him. But he also enjoys good health. If you take all those things away from him, will he still worship you? And then, of course, we get all the stories in the book of Job about Job's suffering. But the Satan, as he is presented to the reader in the book of Job, is the angel who is undertaking the work of a prosecuting counsel in a modern court case.
If Satan came to you in the form of a man, but you knew it was Satan, you had a pretty good idea it was Satan, and he, let's say, wanted to meet with you or talk with you, would you do it?
Wow. Well, I would think, and I don't want this to sound in the least arrogant, but as a sincere Christian priest, as an independent Anglican priest, I would be willing to have a go. You remember the great John L. Sullivan? I can tell you another little story on this one in answer to your question. You remember the great John L. Sullivan, the Boston strong boy, who was magnificent.
The boxer, right?
The boxer, yeah.
Yeah.
He would climb into the ring, look at the audience and his opponent, and would say, I'm John L. Sullivan. I can lick any man alive, including you. And he very often did. Now, there are times when I have what I call, in psychological shorthand, a John L. Sullivan complex. And I like to think I'll tackle anything and anybody. I was doing some exorcisms in a place called the Skirrid Inn, where I was, which is here in Wales, the oldest inn in Wales, possibly one of the oldest in the world. It dates back to the year 1190. And last week I was doing some investigations there with a medium and another team of investigators who had asked me to come in case anything was... It's reputedly a very haunted place, and there are dark influences there. And I got the same feeling then that... if there was any dark negative presence, if there were demons in the place as well as ghosts, then I was in my John L. Sullivan mood, and I was saying, I am an ordained priest and I'm an exorcist, and I have the power of God behind the exorcism. It's not my power, it's the power of all that is good and light. And I wasn't scared of anything that might have been there. Now, the idea of if so, rather like in Faust, in the story of Faustus, where
Mephistopheles,
I love it too, and Mephistopheles appears to him and tempts him and says, look, you can have this beautiful girl. You can have all the beautiful girls you want. You can have money. You can have another 20 years of youth. And Faust thinks, yeah, I'll go for that. Thank you very much. Now, if in that, what I call the Faustian situation.
But he's got to give up his soul, right?
Yeah, he gives up his soul. But yeah, he doesn't. He pays a terrible price for his 20 years of fun. Now, would I be prepared, which is your question, to talk to Satan, to Lucifer, to Mephistopheles? Well, I come back to my John L. Sullivan thinking, and it ain't my power, which is why I'm trying to express it in a way that doesn't make it sound ridiculously arrogant. But I would take on, knowing that as a man of deep and sincere faith, that the powers of goodness and light are infinitely stronger than any powers of darkness. I see myself almost perhaps as a Templar, a warrior priest, and I would be perfectly prepared to talk to Satan if he appeared and would say with the, well, thank you for all those lovely offers, but no thanks. I'm going to stick with the God I love and believe in. And I would also say there's an amazing thing. George MacDonald, who was a Christian writer in the 19th century and who was always regarded as the inspiration behind the works of the great C.S. Lewis. Lewis himself said that anything good in my books came from George MacDonald. He said, I've never written anything worthwhile that I hadn't read in George MacDonald first. So it's a wonderful tribute to MacDonald. But MacDonald was a universalist, and he believed that at the end of all things, even Satan would return to God penitent and take his place in the eternal new world. And I think I would like to say, I mean, my intellect does not equal that of C.S. Lewis or of George MacDonald, but using them as my mentors and models, I would say to any demon that liked to appear to me and talk to me and say, look, I'm not going to listen to thee, or I'm not going to follow what you're tempting me to do, exciting as it sounds, but I do want to share with you my belief that George MacDonald was right, and that one day, no matter what you've done, God will reconvert you and will bring you back into light and joy, the light and joy from which you fell.
That would be good. Let's go to the phones. First-time caller in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Rochelle, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We are great. Thank you.
Good. I have a question. I have epilepsy, and I have heard in the past that they used to lock people with epilepsy up thinking that we were possessed by the devil. And when I was a little girl, I used to get simple partial seizures, and it would really scare me. And I used to think that it was either God punishing me or the devil was trying to scare me. And when I was 19, it turns out after I had a grand mal seizure, these feelings I would get were the simple partials. What do you think about that as far as, you know, with the demons or the devil, anything like that?
I do believe in possession, don't you, Lionel?
Yes, I do. I think that there are strange dark forces out there which can, on occasion, overcome even the best human beings. But I also believe absolutely that they can be cast out again. And I also believe absolutely, as I was saying earlier, that the power of God is infinitely greater. The power of goodness is infinitely greater. It's so easy to understand how during the Middle Ages and earlier that patients who were suffering from epilepsy could have been thought to be demon-possessed because of the, you know, the awful symptoms that the illness inflicts on its victims. And I wonder how many other apparent cases of possession were due to physical causes. When we hear of someone having a stroke, well, the very idea of a stroke going back into the past before we have all our modern medical knowledge was that the stroke victim who had lost the power of speech, lost the power of movement on one half of the body, had been touched either by a god or had received an invisible blow which had left him or her in that reduced condition. Now, what I feel as a man of the 21st century, that when something goes physically wrong with us, it is the result of the natural causes, the biological causes, the genetic causes within the person who is suffering, that it certainly isn't a punishment from God, whose ultimate will for us all is sublime happiness. It may be, of course, that unbeknown to us, there are perhaps certain physical problems or problems that manifest themselves as physical illness, which can be, we know how the mind is linked to the body, and in so many good modern health textbooks, we read that if we can avoid stress, if we can avoid anxiety and overwork, then our immune systems work very much better. So by doing what the good Saint Paul said, think of good things, whatsoever things are pure and holy and of good report, as Saint Paul says, I think that we can improve our physical condition. And if the thoughts in our minds can affect our physical conditions, maybe extraneous thoughts from some of these weird entities that we've been talking about can enter the mind and affect our body in negative ways because of the connection between mind and body.
Would you call werewolves demons?
Wow. I think that there's a whole host of these strange entities from legend and folklore and mythology, the werewolves, the werebears, and over in Hawaii, we went some years ago to investigate the legend of the were shark, which was a shark in water and a man on land, which made friends with people and then took them swimming, and they didn't come back. Now, these were beasts, I think probably the folklore origins are from places where there were genuine dangerous animals. If you lived in a forest where wolves and bears were likely to come out of the trees and kill you, then legends of werebears and werewolves would grow. If you live in a beautiful Pacific island where there are dangerous things in the water, then this is where the legend of the were shark originates. But if such lycanthropes do exist, I think they tend to be very similar to, I would put them on the side of the demons rather than on the side of the angels.
All right, stay with us, Lionel. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Peter Canova joins us as we talk about ancient wisdom. This is a split show today, and when we come back in a moment, we'll take your phone calls with Lionel Fenthorpe on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Lionel Fenthorpe, and we'll go right to the calls. Tim, driving around in Washington, D.C., our capital. Go ahead, Tim.
Yes, good morning. Thank you.
Sure thing.
Lionel, have you ever heard of a demon called Zozo, Z-O-Z-O? He's supposed to be the Ouija board demon.
Right. Now, this is fascinating, Tim, because I could tell you so many occasions when I have been asked to put right as an exorcising priest, some trouble that seems to have begun with Ouija boards, and that there should be one specific demon who is, shall we say, causing the Ouija board problems is extremely interesting. I can remember once being over in France with a party of school kids where I was one of the members of staff, and some boys in one of the dormitories had been playing with a Ouija board, and a very weird, faceless creature appeared in the girls' dormitory on the other side of the wall, causing the kind of panic you could well imagine. And so I went round, blessed the people concerned, and sprinkled holy water, and exorcised the two rooms where the Ouija board had been, and told them, don't play with that again here, son. Take it home with you. This idea of a Zozo demon being specifically responsible, I think, is a very interesting and intriguing one, and I'm very glad you've raised it.
All right, very good. Next up, we've got Lee in New Brunswick, New Jersey. You're on with Lionel. Go ahead, Lee.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. Hello. Hi, Lee.
All right. I had a question about It was during the day. I went to sleep, and I woke up. I had to go to the bathroom. I woke up, and I had been dreaming. I had been dreaming about this demon. I was short, and I ended up in my basement. He was sitting in like a bar stool, and I could see right through his eyes, and he looked like smoke. Now I went to the bathroom, and I lay back down, and I ended up back in the same dream, but this time the thing touched me. And it wrapped itself around my neck, and after it was all done, I mean, I woke up and I heard it laughing in the closet, but it touched my cheek, and it was the coldest thing I ever felt.
Well, there are some amazing experiences that over the last 50 years that Patricia and I have been investigators of the paranormal, and where I, again, as a priest, have been called in to conduct exorcisms, and I have very rarely, over that last 50 years, come across cases like the one that you've just described for me so clearly and so helpfully. Now, if, as George and I were saying earlier in the show, there are these strange entities, which, like the jinn and the demons of mythology and folklore, if they exist, if they have paranormal powers, if they have access to other dimensions, then they can cause the kind of problem that you described. They can be very persistent. Now, for what it's worth, and I hope you'll find it helpful, I myself have had dreams that have seemed so incredibly real that the entity from the dream persists with you when you get out of bed, you know, to go to the bathroom or to just go down and pick a book up because you can't sleep and, you know, go back to bed with the book. And when something persists from a nightmare into a reality, it's what I would call a phenomenon of the sort of double dream, which is really almost paralytically frightening when it happens.
Right.
There's an occasion on which the guy dreams that he has been woken up by some evil entity. Then he wakes up, and then the entity comes through the bedroom door. Now, I've had friends who have come up with that experience. So I said, yours isn't unique, but it is certainly unnerving.
The weird part was falling back into the same dream after I went to the bathroom and laid back down. That never happened to me ever. That's the only reason I even remembered it. I believed it. It was the weirdest thing. I mean, I woke up.
Yeah. But now, that kind of experience, I think, does strongly suggest that it is more than a dream and that there is some kind of, we just don't know if these entities exist, if their intentions towards us are negative and unpleasant, if they wish us harm, then that is one of the ways in which they might seek to contact us, by confusing us about the difference between a dream reality and the reality of everyday life. And as I say, you say a prayer to the great force of light and goodness which protects us all. And I think that just as there are evil entities, such as the one that you may have encountered in your dream and your return to the dream, then there are also benign entities. If demons exist, I'm sure that guardian angels exist. And you have a word with your guardian angel if you ever get an experience like that again, and he'll drive it away.
Possession. Let's talk about that again for just a second, Lionel, and we'll take some more phone calls.
Yep. Just on the subject of the phone calls, George, can I mention one of the wonderful things that happened to me as a result of one of our coast-to-coast phone calls?
Absolutely. And also tell us where we can get your book once it gets published.
Yeah, sure. So the phone call experience was a guy who is now one of my best friends called Brennan Callan from Kentucky. He contacted me through Coast to Coast, and we're now making films together. I'm writing the films. Patricia and I are writing the film scenarios for him, and Brennan is making them. And there's some up now. We did one on road safety, which is now available through the internet. You just hit a search engine and Brennan Callan, and you'll get the road safety film, which I'm very proud to say I wrote, because I'd like to hope he made it so well could save lives. Only a short one. And the other thing, the book that we've been talking about today is called Satanism and Demonology, published by Dundurn, who publish a lot of our mystery books, of Toronto, and available from, you know, anywhere over the internet, any good bookshop, or even come to my website, and I'll be delighted to do a signed copy and post.
Super. Well, your stories are phenomenal. Joe is in Golden Valley, Arizona. You're on with Lionel on Coast to Coast. Joe, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad to have a show like yours, George. This is a fantastic job for society, I think.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And my main question is, there's a ton of religions out there. There's a ton of religions. And for me, when I was little, my grandma would take me to a Catholic church, but I never really got into it. I would bring toys and stuff and play. I never really sunk in. And as I'm getting older and I realize, you know, there's all these religions and I've read a few books, but it's like, which one do you choose? There's so many. How do you know which one is the right one?
Can I put it this way, Joe? Because you have come up with a question which I think is in the minds of maybe half all thinking men and women on this planet. And it's such an important one, and you're asking it on behalf of millions. And I would say this, that if we had a number of friends who were visually handicapped and they were asked to examine an elephant by a sense of touch. They can't see this elephant. One man goes to the back and gets hold of its tail, and he shouts to the others, "Hey, guys, an elephant is like a rope." Another man puts his hand on its side and says, "No, it isn't. It's like a wall covered in leather." Third man's got hold of one of its legs, and he says, "I don't know what you guys are talking about, because an elephant is like a tree." Another guy touches one of the tusks and says, "You're all wrong, boys. An elephant feels like a spear." And the last man touches the elephant's trunk and says, "No, not in my book. An elephant is like a snake." Now, all of them are telling the truth. All of them are being honest. But none of them are giving an accurate picture of a real elephant. And I think this is the case with the different religions, that they all have a small part of the divine truth. And I think that if we could become aware of that divine truth, then the simple statement that Jesus made, that God is love, I believe that real religion is love personified, and that real worship, the best kind of worship, the kind that matters more than any other, is to treat each other as we want to be treated. In other words, real worship is kindness, goodness, unselfishness, generosity to all the folks, and for that matter, all the animals that we come across in this world we share. So think of the blind men with the guys with the visual handicaps and the elephant. And this is what all the different religions are doing. Each one concentrates on a different part of a supreme truth. And the heart of that supreme truth is a God of love who wants us to love one another and be kind.
I'm going to ask you something, Lionel, I haven't asked you ever, and that is, how do you think, regardless of your religion or your spirituality, how do you think this all started?
The whole universe?
Everything.
Everything. Well, as we get some of the latest scientific discoveries, there would seem to be some schools of scientific thought that are coming along, which are suggesting that rather than having a creator, the whole thing just sprang spontaneously into existence, or even more remarkable, that it simply has always been here. That there are also some scientific thinkers who regard the universe as having a sort of pulsing effect, so that it goes from that Big Bang theory at the very beginning and expands and expands at ever-increasing speeds and ever greater distances until it gets right to the very limit of what it can reach. And it then begins to contract again to this infinitely small point, after which it then blows up. So you've got a thing like a great beating heart taking a million and more years, many millions of years, for each beat. I myself prefer to think of God as over and above and beyond the universe, as having always been here, and because the nature of God is love, love is creative. Love seeks to create happiness. And so to be God, to be the ultimate being of infinite power and of infinite knowledge, is to be love and to want to make things in which love can be expressed. So if I could, without being blasphemous, imagine myself for a moment as being God at the very beginning of all things, imagine that I have infinite power and infinite goodness, as I believe he has, then I would want to make an environment. I'd want to create it and then sustain it so that the beings who would grow in it as life developed would be capable freely of expressing love back to me. Now, I have a very small human mind, and by trying to put that mind into the place where God was at the beginning of all things, I'm imagining with, I feel a little bit like, shall we say, an ant trying to imagine the world around me when I hear a musician sitting and having a picnic near my anthill and playing his violin. And I've got no idea what it is. And now, that's about the size of my mind compared to the creative mind of God. In other words, when you and I and our listener friends try to imagine what God is like and what God did in the beginning, we're like the ant trying to understand the music that's drifting across from the picnic ground. But I am certain, in as far as my very limited mind can be certain, that there is a wonderful being. Jesus described him as, when you think of God, think of a loving father. So he's a super parent, or she is a super parent, and has created the entire cosmos so that beings like us, who are self-aware and who are able to think, can understand and experience an environment in which we are free to direct our love to God in return for His, and to direct our love to other human beings. That's the best I can do with that magnificent question.
That's not bad. Let's go to San Diego. Roderick, you're up with us, first-time caller. Hi, Roderick.
Hi, George. Hi, Lionel.
Hi, Rod.
A quick question. I just saw a movie. It was called The Fourth Kind. And in the movie, there was an incident that took place in Nome, Alaska. And there was a doctor there who recorded video and audio recordings of what seemed to be possessions of people whom claimed to be also abductees. Now, during the audio and the video, the voices in the video sound pretty demonic, and I believe one of the researchers whom they consulted about it said that the voices were speaking a Sumerian language. I was just wondering, during your research, have you ever found any correlations between extraterrestrials and demons?
I have come across a number of cases in which it would be very, very difficult to decide what that entity was. This story from Alaska is an extremely interesting one. And there are occasions in which honest witnesses who are very balanced and thoughtful and are prepared to look at all the possibilities have come across what they've described in their reports as entities of unknown origin. And in one of the talks that I've given in the past about what ghosts might be, in inverted commas, when somebody says, hey, what is a ghost? I think that they could be extraterrestrials making contact with us. And of course, the idea of possession there, which comes into the Alaskan story, gives us the possibility of a being from, say, the other side of the universe, or a being from the other side of the grave, speaking through a human being who is acting as a medium for that intelligence. And when that personality comes from outside the individual and uses him, it's a little bit as if I make it, as a really simplified, you and I, exchanging interesting ideas, are using a telephone and a radio in order to exchange those ideas. We're 3,000 miles apart. I'm sitting in Wales in the UK. You're in the USA. And there's George and his team running the radio show. And it's a medium through which we can contact each other. Now, maybe there are human mediums which we can use to contact each other.
Lionel, good luck with the new book, Satanism and Demonology. He'll always be back. He's a special guest on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.